Hello, everyone, and we welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion. We're so glad you could join us. Today is Sunday, June 23rd, 2019. Someone has their computer on, if you could turn it off, please. We're getting an echo. Today is Sunday, June 23rd. 2019, and we are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church, Independent, Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America, and we welcome you all. And we will start this morning with our morning prayer.
From Divinity Course and General Collectania, known as the Blue Book, page 224 by Mary Baker Eddy. Oh, may the light that is never dimmed to so encompass you that no night is there. May his angels hold thee in their power, and songs of science be heard in the intuitions of thought, so your life is in tune with the rhythm of God.
Thank you. All right, we will go to the watching point.
Watch number 369. Watch that you bear in mind the three tests God in his infinite wisdom puts us all through, so that you may be able to pass them with honors. The first test is the need to learn to seek God for his own sake rather than for our own, so that we may praise him by reflecting his mind. In this way, personal and inferior motives are put down. The second test is the willingness to forget self and one's own desires in order to help others. This means to be willing to be in service 24 hours a day with no vacation from God and his work. The third test is the necessity to bleed sweet under affliction, to love more for every hate and persecution. The sugar maple bleeds sweet sap when you gash it. The genuine scientist can be detected by this fact, namely, that he bleeds sweet, not sour, when afflicted. End quote.
Dear Gilbert Carpenter, I can't tell you through the years how this watching point had helped me get through things. Those three things, they should be lodestones, stars.
They should be written on your forehead.
Written on your forehead. You seek him. You don't seek your healing. Healing is a byproduct. To call yourself a real scientist, you seek him, God, understanding him, loving him more, serving him more. You seek him and your oneness with him. Two. Unselfish, unselfed. You begin to forget self in serving all mankind, a servant. And then thirdly, bleeding sweet. And that is absolute requirement, because you will be put under the gun. Things can be said or done about you, towards you, whatever. And if you don't bleed sweetly through it, you'll be not the good soil, the soil that uproots itself and the plant that uproots itself and leaves.
I looked up sour and it's bitter, and they even put resentment next to it. So I thought that was interesting.
Thank you very much. Yes, you get bitter, you get angry, you start blaming others. Why are people doing this to me, or whatever? That's persecution for righteousness' sake, and this is where you have to bleed sweetly. You can't take your marbles and go. This is when the greatest growth will come, if you persevere, put your head down in humility, and learn to love more. Anyone want to comment further?
And all of these tests will come.
And when you first are new to science, yes, you come for the healing. That's the bait to catch the fish. And that's perfectly understandable. And that will go on for a while. You come to be healed. But not soon after that, the three tests come. And I never read this quite like that before Carpenter and these watching points. But I will read Mrs. Eddy, Miscellaneous Writings, her article, Obedience. Obeying the divine principle would do best to understand love demonstrates truth. The ultimate of scientific research and attainment in divine science is not an argument. It is not merely saying, but doing the word, demonstrating truth. Even as the fruits of watchfulness, prayer, struggles, tears, and triumphs. That's the part everyone doesn't like. You want to skip over part. But you can't be living the word unless you have some of that. The fruits of watchfulness, prayer, struggles, tears, and triumphs. And I would like to hear of anyone who hasn't gone through that. And if you think you can avoid it, or if you think this is why you want to be a Christian Scientist, just because you want a la-di-da life, you've come to the wrong place. And then it goes on. And this is never absent from your never ill-humored, never unready to work for God. It's obedience. Being faithful over a few things. If in one instance obedience be lacking, you lose the scientific rule and its reward, namely, to be made ruler over many things. A progressive life is the reality of life that unfolds its immortal. When people come to our church, class taught, they said they've been in science all their life. They don't even know this. Never absent from your post. One of the first things maybe they'll do, they'll go away for a vacation. And that's fine if you don't want to be a consecrated Christian Scientist. So never absent from your post. I mean, if you go away, you should be reachable, especially if you're working in church because things need to be done. Never off guard. Never off in la-la land so something takes you by surprise. Because in la-la land, animal magnetism is working. Never ill-humored, grouchy, grumpy, resentful, losing your joy, your peace, your equilibrium, your poise. And then, never unready to work for God. Sometimes, you know, people will be asked to do something and, you know, they have a balk or they think they can balk and they think they can't do it. They have reasons. They a little, a little. Well, and that's okay too. That maybe is honest, but you're also telling me where you are, which is okay. You don't want to do anything you don't feel in your heart to do.
But just don't profess to be a Christian Scientist.
Don't profess too much if that's that's all right, but because it's dangerous when you start this professing and then are not willing to follow those steps.
But so many people think they're giving up something to always be ready to work for God. Some people think that that's asking too much. You know, well, we got to have some time to have fun, right?
Some time to ourselves. Some time to take a break from all this.
Yeah, but even yeah, during the break, yeah, you know.
Pardon me.
No, I was going to say, even during the break, if God is in everything we do, which he should be, then that covers that 24/7 in service. After all, we're thinking all the time, so our thoughts should be you know, as we are told in the Bible as well, holy thoughts, think with God. We do everything with God. So the 24/7 is not so undoable.
Thank you very much.
Exactly.
That explains it quite well.
I was just thinking this morning, I was possibly going to do this for my Wednesday testimony, but just thinking about how everything and the time I need is always given to me. You know, like yesterday, Napoleon sent a whole bunch of stuff to do. So he didn't send it through the week when it would have been more difficult to do. He sent it at the right time. And if I need a couple hours, God lets me know, because then I have a couple hours where I don't really have anything to do. So it works out so perfectly.
And that is being in what Lawrence read, the last little bit that she read, which was what?
The rhythm of God. Yeah.
Thank you. It's being in the rhythm of God. And you will be right in step. It'll be flow. You'll feel it. You won't be rushing around, out of breath, trying to impress people with all you're doing, lagging around and, you know, always after the fact. And you'll just time doing the right thing, saying the right thing, offering to help in the right way to someone. Time, and that person called yesterday exactly the right time to hang up. It was exactly the right time. I had a good long time to talk to him because I was in the car traveling, and it was just perfect, as it always should be, whatever. So if you're finding yourself out of step with things, or going either too fast, pushing, running, racing, or la da 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 da, and remember this, the rhythm of God. It'll keep you in step. And that's obedience.
And what you read from obedience, where she says scientific research and attainment, it just seems to be a part of it. You know, it requires some work to find that.
Thank you very much. Yes. Obedience. All of you should know what you should have it, part of it memorized. It should be written on your forehead. But these are things we were given, the watching points. We were giving them over and over all the time. Work with them. Think about them. And if you don't, well, that's your choice, but you're missing out on a tremendous amount of good. So who will read the golden text? Jeffrey?
Thus saith the Lord, ye shall not see wind, shall ye see rain, yet that valley shall be filled with water. And drink, both ye and your cattle and your beasts. And this is but a light thing in the sight of the Lord.
I love that. And Peter said that music, which is when I first really was more aware of that verse, and they'll sing it today in church, is but a light thing to the Lord. And I don't think I announced our subject, which is the universe, including man, evolved by atomic force. So what you have that is a heavy, heavy burden on your heart and physical problem, relationship problem, financial problem. Remember this. It is but a light thing in the sight of the Lord. So don't let it bury you deep. God always has an answer. Have you searched for him with your soul? And are you willing to be obedient? pray about it, but sometimes you have to take an action. You've got to look for that job relationship problem. You've got to address maybe a lifestyle that's causing you to feel so ill. You can't just be in dreamy absentness. And then, dost thou know the balancing of the clouds, the wondrous works of him which is perfect in knowledge? And I love, and this is maybe the theme of this lesson this week, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament showeth his handiwork. And that beautiful, beautiful hymn, the heavens declare the glory of him who made all things. Okay, so any comments so far? Any questions? Well, we have that first story that's so beautiful, too, about Elijah. They were having a drought. And he prayed, he put his face between his knees, total humility. Did they see a big clouds coming?
No.
How many times did he tell his servant to go out?
Seven.
Mm-hmm. What does that show?
Assistance.
Persistence.
Completeness.
Yes.
Giving all. And,
Yep.
And absolutely obedience.
Persistence wins the prize.
And faith.
It reminds me of one of my coffee cups. It has a saying on it, never, 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 ever give up.
Winston Quote, Churchill.
And it was given to us by Jared. And when Florence is around, she likes to use that cup. It. We don't ever give up. We don't ever take no for an answer. If God is telling us to do something, we march forward. That was another thing we learned here. There's no impossible situation. And if you accept one impossible situation, then you'll accept a whole lot of impossible situations. So don't give up. Persist if God is directing you. If not, and you're just using human will, well, then that's not so good. And it brings that out in the lesson this week. I find it interesting when it begins to talk about the physical universe expresses the conscious and unconscious thoughts of mortals. Physical force and mortal mind are one. Now this is getting away from the first creation. And it often uses words that apply to sight. Erring power is a material belief, a blind miscalled force, the offspring of will. This is the pushing of it, and not of wisdom, of the mortal mind and not of the immortal. It is the headlong cataract. Now, cataract in this sense is a cascade of water, tremendous scale. But the idea of cataracts in your eyes, preventing you from seeing what needs to be seen. Florence?
No, I mean, it's the same thing. It's a blinding. It's a, in other words, no transparency for correct sight, cataracts.
Thank you. Thank you. That's beautiful. Human will and blindness are often together in science and health and in other places. Because when you are full of human will and you got to press forward and push and rush and all this stuff, you don't see any of you. You're certainly not listening to God. You might think you are in a self-important way, but you are not. And then the tempest breath, tempest, violent agitation, rushing wind. It is lightning and hurricane, all that is selfish, wicked, dishonest, and impure. It's so interesting. There's nothing Mrs. Eddy doesn't take up or treat if we are mindful.
Well, it's interesting that she includes lightning and hurricane in the same sentence as selfish, wicked, dishonest, and impure. These are states of thought that produce these destructive conditions. This is not the will of God. This is not an act of God, as a lot of legal documents will try to describe floods or hurricanes. No. This is a human thought. And that is how we handle weather conditions. That is how Mrs. Eddy healed potentially bad weather.
It's by knowing the unreality and the powerlessness of the human mind, which would seem to cause it. You see, the human mind and then that effect, they're one and the same. And they're all illusion. They're all not of God. But if you're in that human mind, if you've been expressing selfish, wickedness, dishonesty, impurity, willfulness, until you wake up, it's a mass mesmerism. That's why I loved, you know, Parthens, when we once had that hurricane a while ago. I guess it was Sandy. He sent the, you know, the idea that everyone is watching the television and becoming it's a mass mesmerism about what's going to happen. It has to be. He also sent me a book called Angels Don't A-A-R-P, and it is about the technology of certain countries, including the United States of America, who do things to
the atmosphere to create weather conditions.
Yeah. They do things. They drop seeds, what all they do, but the book explains some of it. It started out to try to be helpful, but you know, you're playing with something perhaps you shouldn't be playing with. And when we see all of the flooding in the Midwest, perhaps this is why our work becomes even more challenging. But nonetheless, we can prove its nothingness. And we must. Mrs. Eddy, and we're going to end on what Mrs. Eddy did in her home, according to the weather. But she had people working on the weather every single day. And all of us should be doing it too. And not just for your own area. Yes, certainly first and foremost. And unselfishly to include. No one can come under these.
It makes me think that maybe
and she goes on our surplus. Go ahead.
I think it makes me think that maybe I was speaking. Sometimes it keeps like I don't hear what you're saying. That's why. Sorry. Saying that I think Mrs. Eddy made so much emphasis on weather because it really expresses the state of thought people are in. So.
Yes. And she's this, and again, this is what separates us from everything, every other religion. I mean, I've read where religions, all they no, you don't get into
weather. No, Jesus did. And instructed his disciples to do so the same.
Unauthorized literature over and over and over, she's saying, you're not a Christian Scientist until you handle what you do, given testimonies about it. And how to. God's government of the weather. Anyone else?
Yes, that's always the key, because what you're talking about, governments or people trying to affect it, that's like trying to, if your car ran out of gas and you fill up the radiator, it's not going to run any better. So they're trying to fix it in the wrong place. If it's the wrong thought that's causing the problem, then planting seeds or whatever, dumping something out of the sky isn't going to change that. And the unselfish part here is that we definitely, this has been kind of on my mind, we definitely have to work on the weather, because the farmers are so far behind in trying to plant anything that it's really a very big crisis for them.
This is where our work is so important, and why we have to not be self-involved, as the Watching Point says. This is just not about your own little home. It's much greater than that. Parthens once told me on a lake in Georgia, I probably told you this once, but before, and he was with someone who was doing this weather. And there was a big, across the lake, there was this great big noisy party going on. And so his friend disappeared for a while, and then he came back, and there was this huge rainstorm right over the house that was having the party. This guy had done something to cause it to rain across the lake. So the party stopped because of the rain, and the noise stopped. But Parthens was appalled. He couldn't believe it. And he said, well, what are you doing? Why would you do that? And I think the guy just said, well, because he could. So this is the danger of all of this. We don't know whose hands it's going to get in and what it would be for. And only God has the answer.
And that's why Mrs. Eddy calls erring power a blind miscalled force. And there's one statement that she makes in the lesson here that I think puts all of this in perspective. She says, physical force and mortal mind are one. That caused me to think for a long time. All of these so-called physical forces are the manifestation of mortal thought. And when they are erring, in other words, when they are not of God, they're blind. You don't know what's going to happen. That's why our consciousness has to be always directed by God. Our consciousness has to be God.
And when it is, it's a total protection. And if you can't perhaps protect everyone and everything, you will protect your home. And there are many, many examples of that. And many of you have given testimonies about that. There was one outstanding one I'd read a long time ago about a practitioner, and she was in San Francisco during the great earthquake. And everything around her was destroyed, but her house was not touched. No human explanation for that. So, and so all of this, it says, the manifestations of evil which counterfeit divine justice are called in the scriptures the anger of the Lord. In reality, they show the self-destruction of error or matter and point to matter's opposite, the strength and permanency of spirit. Christian Science brings to light truth and its supremacy, universal harmony, the entireness of God good, and the nothingness of evil. So please remember that. And we do not accept this, the anger of the Lord, or this is an act of God. Good grief. Shows the destruction of error, yes, and it will continue. Just as in the case of Sodom and Gomorrah, But if there were 10 righteous people, what?
They would be saved.
Would be saved. Now, is Suzanne here?
Yes.
Okay, she addressed this global warming or global freezing or whichever it goes. So, Suzanne, did you want to say anything? In her forum post, she did.
I'm in a car, so
okay.
We're in and out. But I feel like we just need to focus on God, and God is fully capable of taking care of his creation. And the world is terrorized right now by fear of climate change. But Mrs. Eddy does address it in Science and Health. And you can make a choice. Am I going to be gripped by fear, or am I going to focus on God? And you go outside and look at nature. It is beautiful. And every day, so I can go outside in my garden and look at the birds and nature and thank God for this beautiful creation and know that he's perfectly capable of caring for all of his ideas and not fear the future. But we are supposed to live in the now also. And it seems the world thought is living in a future nightmare scenario that is that is really speculative at this point. So it's what we focus on. We need to focus on God, and that's something I learned here.
Thank you.
Thank you. And that's the only answer, isn't it? That's the only answer to anything, whether it's fear of weather, fear of disease, fear of war, fear of anything.
And that's the importance, too, of not listening to all these dire predictions. And for everyone that tells you the dire predictions, there's also those who will say, this isn't happening. That's just not true. This winter, there was someone, he was saying, well, we're going to have a mini ice age this winter. It's going to continue every winter. I don't know what happened to global warming. Now we're in an ice age. And so we had a few cold days. Hey, guess what, guys? We had a few cold days. It was really cold, okay? I mean, that happens. We wore coats and scarves. And I always pray that we'll be cold enough so we can go ice skating out on the ponds and lakes, which didn't happen. But it was cold for, oh my goodness, cold for 30 days. Good night.
It was a gift from God.
Yeah, of course. But what is it? The polar vortex. It sounds awful. Oh, please.
What a term. Somebody got a government grant.
Honestly. And if you think of, you have no faith in God, if you're secular and you're living, and science can provide the answers. It's going to cure the cancer. It's going to do this. And man will do it. Yes, man will do it. But the weather, whoops, I don't know about the weather. So let's worry, 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 worry.
I really appreciate this post because it reminded, because there's such a debate on what is even causing it or how to solve it. And it just takes it totally out of there. It doesn't even belong to us. It belongs to God. And then God tells us how to solve it.
And do you know all the money, the taxpayers' money that is spent on all these commissions and people that research and research? I this was the most bizarre thing, but I've seen it's actually, I think it's a book. Someone researched whether woodpeckers get headaches. I mean, that to me is they don't have enough to do with their time. Of course, how would a gunman make a woodpecker to get a headache? How absurd. He doesn't want anyone to get a headache.
But then,
so that's an important point. Mike?
Yes, I just want to play a little bit of a devil's advocate here, I guess. I think the other side of it, though, is that the Bible does say that these calamities will increase as human thought keeps decreasing. And from farming, you know, I hate to say it, but I'm glad in a way and not so glad in a way that I'm not farming right now, because the weather has become so bizarre from when I was farming, but that would give me a chance to apply Christian Science. So there was a time when I was still making hay for my wife's horses, and I had like a window. It was going to be this day, and I had to go do it. And I would always have good weather, even if it was stormy. So that for most of the year. So that would give me confidence and understanding of God really does control the weather, and human thought does control the weather through God. But the first thing you have to do is, not you, but the first thing one has to do is recognize that there might be an issue. So if people say there's nothing going on because of all these wars, all these increased hurricanes or whatever, I don't think that's the solution either. But Christian Science does give us the solution. And that's what I love about it.
Well, absolutely. We have the solution. We just have to apply it and know it. And there is, and Mrs. Eddy talks about this too, this chemicalization and things coming. Things probably are going to get worse before they'll get better. It's all coming out. And it's going to separate the men from the boys.
But that's the secularization of society that is self-destructive.
And it will
be. That's what it is. And it is coming to the surface. People are making greater and greater demands upon their belief systems, whether it's their religions or their churches or their schools or their government or whatever it is that they... And those institutions that fail will fail badly. And the true science, which never fails, will be seen as the only true answer. But it seems like people have to try everything else before they come to science. So if that's what's required, then so be it.
Yeah, Gary read that article about systems failing and has given testimonies about that. What was it, Clarence Chadwick or someone? All these human systems and ways are going to have to rise up, but then they'll fail.
And we should be grateful for their failure, because they teach one grand lesson. That the only source for security is in God.
Yes, and the lesson in the Bible, the heathen raged, it's the heathen raging, right? The secular, they're raging. The kingdoms were moved, but he uttered his voice and the earth melted. And be still and know that I am God, which was also a theme. And in the lesson in the Bible, in Mark, Jesus stilling the storm, peace, be still. Here he is asleep on the pillow, and it's a great storm of wind. Waves beat unto the ship, and the ship was full of water, and Jesus was asleep. He knew it was not the truth. So what did you write about peace, be still, Linda, in your forum?
I can just read, if you want, what Bicknell wrote.
Yes, that was beautiful.
Okay. It's from the grouping of articles that we have, and this one particular one's called God is Individual Consciousness. That's by Bicknell Young, and it's an excerpt. Quote, when Jesus stilled the waves, his only words were, peace be still. Mark 4:39. Isn't this a wonderful treatment? Peace be still. It becomes necessary for us to realize a peace be still to every disturbance, to every disturbed thought, and therefore to all discordant or inharmonious outer conditions. When Jesus said, peace be still, he was not directing his thought to the troubled waves or to the storm. He was not addressing disturbed thought. And the disturbed mind of the disciples, of those on board of the ship. Nor was he addressing them as person, but rather to the universal belief of a disturbed thought, to the universal belief of a mind apart from God, to the universal belief of inharmonious inner and outer conditions. He was declaring, "Peace, be still." End quote.
Oh, it's just beautiful.
Thank you.
Remember to declare that often when you see agitated conditions. Don't personalize it. It's the illusion of a life, a belief of a life in matter, a life apart from God. And it needs to be told, "Peace, be still." Command the wave, whatever that wave is that presents itself to you, whether it's a bad cough, a stomach problem, an unruly child, government conditions, bad weather. Peace, be still. And Jeremy, you wrote a bit on that as well.
Oh, yeah, we've had those verses in previous lessons where they, you know, the disciples were saying, "What manner of man is this that even the wind and sea obey him?" And it amazed me before that they saw Jesus do all these really wonderful things, but then drew the line at the weather. This week I've been thinking about, you know, where is that limitation within myself? What portions of my life do I accept God's power and that Christian Science work, and what portions am I thinking it doesn't work? So it's been a very good thing for me this week. But I've been grateful because, you know, before the church, I had no understanding of any of it. So since coming here, there's been this progression of seeing all these things and, you know, seeing like the watches that we have done for these wars that seemed inevitable, and then they were gone out of the news really, really soon. You know, it's just so many things. So I'm just so grateful for that these limitations have fallen away. So.
Thank you. And we do have to remember that, you know, there'll be these big things that are going on in the news, and then we pray about it, we do watches, and then it's gone. We never hear about it again. And then we wonder if our watches are effective. Well, remember, they are. They are effective. Don't concentrate on everything that's wrong. Remember all that's been taken care of and dealt with. So it's very important.
Another thing I was just thinking about, how as time has gone on, the weather and these wars and things in government and all this, it all ends up seeming like tantrums. You know, and a child's tantrum does not affect what the parents are going to do. You just, all right, stop the tantrum, let's get going. So that's why I feel like, you know, God is like, I don't know why you're worried. I got everything. It's all set.
Exactly. So. Yes. Yes. Good illustration. And then this, what? Go ahead, Florence.
Yeah, and that "peace be still" really speaks to everything. I think to Jeremy's point about limitation, to certain things we kind of stop there. Well, isn't it true too for a headache? Isn't it true for anything, in my stomach hurting and all that, like you alluded to before, Mary? I mean, it's everything, "peace be still." It speaks to God's allness, and there is nothing else.
Yes, thank you. It's a wonderful statement of truth. You don't need, sometimes people will call and just say, "Well, what do you have to give me today?" or something. Like they want a big buildup of things. Just take one simple thing and use that. Prove it to yourself. It's all you need. And then Parthens wrote so beautifully about this story, but in the beginning, "And there was gathered unto him," unto Jesus, "a great multitude, so that he entered into a ship and sat in the sea. And the whole multitude was by the sea on the land." And then, reading this passage, opened to my view a mighty picture of what must now come to pass upon the whole earth. Great multitudes of people from every nation gathered unto him in fulfillment of Mrs. Eddy's daily prayer. "May thy word enrich the affections of all mankind and govern them." And he goes on, but he says that as modeled by Jesus in his long hours of prayer before dawn, watching means establishing a deep, ceaseless connection with the thought force of science that launched the earth in its orbit and said to the proud wave, thus far and no farther. The wisdom of God guarantees that through obedience to certain immutable principles, Christian science principles, through hours of committed watching and importunate prayer, watchers can at last connect with thought force that creates worlds to loose entire populations from their earth-bound moorings and launch them in all into the orbit around the sun of righteousness. That is just beautiful. You see, it takes one simple thought and expands on it like that. Gathered unto him a great multitude. So the heavens declare the glory of him who made all things. And we must remember this and remember too in our always in our work for weather. It's not what we want. It's this is God's government of the weather. And it's very important that we allow God to rule his universe without our
trying to interfere.
Yeah. So I'm ending a little bit early. I could have talked or had this go on for another few hours, but this I'm going to have Gary read a bit from Memoirs of Mary Baker Eddy by Adam Dickey. And it was how they worked in Mrs. Eddy's home, which we need to hear. So
okay. Each mental worker in the home occupied his own room, which was large, airy, and comfortably furnished with private bath connected. The injunction, quote, never forsake your post, end quote, was one that was strictly obeyed by every mental worker in our leader's home. Each was always to be found in his own room. And when a change was proposed in the line of mental work to be taken up, Mrs. Eddy would give her secretary the language of the watch, or perhaps it would be sent to his room by Mr. Fry, Mrs. Sargent, or Mrs. Eddy's maid, whichever one happened to be convenient when the inspiration reached our leader. Carbon copies were made of these watches, and one was taken directly to the room of each worker as a guide to him in his mental work. The subjects covered by these watches were endless in their variety. One thing in particular that our leader requested her workers to care for was the weather. And this was done in addition to the work of the committee in Boston appointed for that special purpose. During some of the severe New England winters, when a greater amount of snow than usual was falling, our leader would instruct her workers that they must put a stop to what seemed to be the steadily increasing fall of snow, which she looked upon as a manifestation of error. She had an aversion to an excessive fall of snow. She considered it as an agent of destruction and interference with the natural and normal trend of business. We are quick to recognize the fact that an unusually heavy fall of snow in any community is a disastrous thing. It clogs the wheels of commerce, interferes with traffic, interrupts the regular routine of business affairs, and breaks in upon the harmony and continuity of man's peaceful existence. Millions of dollars are spent annually in many places to remove the effects of heavy snowfalls. And so this was one of the points that was covered by Mrs. Eddy's mental workers. One of the watches issued January 15, 1910, requested her mental workers to make a law that there shall be no more snow this season. When our leader first came to live at Chestnut Hill in the spring and summer of 1908, thunderstorms and electric disturbances seemed to be unusually prevalent. This was another form of error which our leader disliked very much. A gentle rainfall was a delight to her, but a destructive electrical storm she abhorred. She evidently looked upon it as a manifestation of evil and a destructive agency of mortal mind. Mrs. Sargent was the one to whom she was especially assigned the work of watching the weather and bringing it into accord with normal conditions. for the 3 years during our leader's stay in Chestnut Hill, and for several years thereafter, the recollection of the writer is that there were fewer and fewer thunderstorms until they almost ceased to be. Upon one occasion, after she had given her workers some instructions regarding the weather, and after we had all repaired to our several rooms to continue, a succession of taps on her bell called us all back in her sitting room, where, as was our custom, we arranged ourselves in front of her chair very much as the old-fashioned class in school arranged itself in front of the schoolmaster, pointing with her finger to the first one in the class, which happened to be myself. She said, "Mr. Dickey, can a Christian Scientist control the weather?" "Yes, Mother." To the next person, "Can a Christian Scientist control the weather?" "Yes, Mother." To the next, "Can a Christian Scientist control the weather?" "Yes, Mother." "Mr. Fry, can a Christian Scientist control the weather?" "Yes, Mother." To the next person, "Can a Christian Scientist control the weather?" "Yes, Mother." This question was put to each member of the class with the same reply. After we had all repeated our answers, an expression of rejection, not to say scorn, came upon her face, and she said with emphasis, "They can't, and they don't." This brought a look of surprise to the face of each member of the class, for we had just been instructed, as we thought, how to take care of the weather. She repeated the statement, "They can't," but immediately she added, "But God can and does." "Now," she said, "I want you to see the point I am making. A Christian Scientist has no business attempting to control or govern the weather, any more than he has a right to attempt to control or govern sickness. But he does know, and must know, that God governs the weather, and no other influence can be brought to bear upon it. When we destroy mortal minds' belief that it is a creator, and that it produces all sorts of weather, good as well as bad, we shall then realize God's perfect weather and be the recipients of his bounty in that respect. God's weather is always right. A certain amount of rain and sunshine is natural and normal, and we have no right to interfere with the steady operations of divine wisdom in regulating meteorological conditions. Now, I called you back because I felt you did not get my former instructions correctly, and I want you to remember that the weather belongs to God, and when we destroy the operation of mortal mind and leave the question of regulating the weather to God, we shall have weather conditions as they should be. Every Christian Scientist will see the force of our leader's instruction in this respect. Mortal mind's attempts to take out of the hands of the creator of the universe his dispensation of weather should be met and overcome through the realization of what really constitutes God's government regarding the weather. I have heard our leader describe in a number of instances how she had dissipated a thundercloud by simply looking upon it and bringing to bear upon mortal mind's concept of this manifestation of discord what God really has prepared for us. And she illustrated this by a wave of her hand, indicating the total disappearance of the thundercloud and its accompanying threat. As time went on, the serious nature of our work at Chestnut Hill dawned upon my thought. I saw that we were there filling one of the most important positions that could be assigned to humankind.
And I truly believe that all of us here today should feel as if we are part of Mrs. Eddy's household and take up this work. It's so very important to the world. And the heavens declare the glory of him who made all things. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.